You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
This week's bits. The best news nuggets from Breakfast and The Wire from this week.
And welcome to this week's bits. This week we talked drugs. The Opportunities Party released their proposed cannabis policy, saying the current legal approach to cannabis does more harm than actually smoking it, with the government dealing with it through the courts, police, and forcing people to interact with gangs. Reuben McLaren spoke to Jeff Simmons, the deputy leader of the party, about their new policy.
Well, it's all about reducing harm, so what we did was looked into the harm that is caused by the use of cannabis, and actually, well, the first point is that it's far less than the harm caused by alcohol, which is, of course, a legal drug. And most of the harm caused by cannabis is actually caused by the fact that it is illegal. So, firstly, people have to contact and deal with criminals in order to access the drug, which can lead to harms. Of course, often it leads to that's actually the source of the gateway drug problem, that people get exposed to harder drugs like P. In fact, often gangs will restrict the availability of cannabis so that they can push P, which has a higher profit margin. And the second major source of harm from the use of cannabis is the fact that we criminalise it and we put people through the criminal justice system, which leads to all sorts of problems, because actually prisons are basically universities for crime. People come out more likely to commit crimes than they go in. So those are the two major sources of harm from cannabis in New Zealand. So actually, as we're seeing overseas, we can reduce harm by legalising it, by regulating it, and in particular taxing it, so that we can keep the price high, keep usage under control, and use the money that raises to reinvest in education, alcohol and drug treatment programs, and good mental health stuff for young people.
So what age limit would you impose on it?
So we're looking at the age of 20 as an age limit. Of course, there is some evidence that up until the age of 25, while the brain is developing, that cannabis can have a negative impact on brain development. But of course, we need to balance that with the fact that obviously, younger people are more likely to use the drug. So we had to strike a pragmatic balance there and came out with 20 as the position.
With regards to brain development and consumption of cannabis, do you know what the similarities are with alcohol?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of similarities with alcohol, in that, both of them are generally better off not consumed until the brain is fully formed, which for some people can be as old as 25, as I mentioned. The one issue that is quite different for cannabis is that some people have a genetic predisposal to schizophrenia, which can be triggered by smoking cannabis when their brain isn't fully developed. So that's one thing in cannabis that is quite different. But of course, there's other risks with alcohol that are quite different too, in terms of particularly in terms of the amount of accidents that it can cause amongst young people.
Do you know what the numbers are on that? As in, how many people are genetically predisposed to develop schizophrenia from cannabis use?
No, I mean, it's not a big it's not a big percentage of society. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but this is something that the Dunedin study has helped improve the data on. Yeah, we're not talking massive numbers, but it is a risk.
And why does the Opportunities Party go for full legalisation as opposed to just legalisation for medicinal use?
Well, actually, there's better evidence that we should legalise completely than just for medicinal use.
New research also came out from Know Your Stuff NZ about drug taking at festivals. It found that almost a third of illicit drugs tested at music festivals were not what the user thought they were taking. We had Associate Health Minister Peter Dunn give us his take on the call for legalising drug testing at music festivals.
I think that there is some ambiguity over the legal situation. I think that the results from the tests over the summer show that they're worthwhile, and I would want to encourage more of them. The question of the legality needs to be resolved, and when we review the Misuse of Drugs Act in the next couple of years, then I would expect that issue to be resolved at that point, if not sooner.
If not sooner, so are there other ways other than
reforming? Well, it depends on what the legal position is. And if it can be, I'd be certainly open to that. I don't think it's prudent to do a sort of a one-off amendment, because this is actually part of the whole framework, and I think you need to do the whole lot in one go, and that's a massive task, because you don't want to get... This is an anomalous situation. The risk is, in doing sort of one-off solutions, you create more anomalies than you resolve, and I'm just not really willing to do that.
Right, and when you talk about the legalities, you're talking about festival organisers and volunteers getting caught up and potentially charged over
this.
Yeah,
I mean, the key piece of the law seems to be the provision that says it's an offence to knowingly permit the consumption of drugs on your premises. Now, you could argue, and I think with some credibility, that having drug testing facilities outside of premises doesn't of itself put you into the position of knowingly permitting the consumption on premise, because I don't think you've got any guarantee that someone who turns up outside and has a product tested is necessarily automatically, I mean, it's more likely than not, I can see, but it's not automatically that they're going to go and consume those products on the site. So I think that's a grey area that does need to be resolved. I think it also does come down to a measure of police discretion, and that's obviously an ongoing discussion.
And you say you've been working with the Drug Foundation, and they in turn have been working with the community group that put this recent research out, and now there's a Pledge Me campaign running, trying to secure more funding. I mean, is the government going to ever invest in this kind of research? Or?
Well, it's not really the government's role to invest in that. I mean, we're satisfied in the quality of the work that's been done. I'm in reasonably frequent touch with Ross Bell, none of what's been announced over the last few days comes as any great surprise. So it's a question of what's the best way forward, and I think there are a number of options that are on the table, and we'll just keep an open discussion going.
So the hoops that need to be overcome are not that enough research and testing has been done. Is that what you're saying?
I'm satisfied on the basis of last summer's experience that the claims made about the the positive benefit from this testing for both the wider community in terms of public safety and the individuals, I'm satisfied that's so. That was a sample, I think, from memory, 300 and something people. You could argue it's not big enough, but I think it's pretty clear. So I don't think that's the issue. The issue is clarifying the legal situation and just what sorts of circumstances might exist that enable such testing to continue. Bear in mind, this is a purely voluntary activity. The person who submits product for a test is doing so voluntarily. The group that organises the testing is doing so on the same basis. We're not requiring people to submit or do anything of that nature. It's a purely voluntary activity. So I think we're just going to see what the possibilities are, and it's an ongoing discussion, and I think it's a pretty constructive one.
The 2017 Parliamentary Drug Law Symposium kicked off on Wednesday in Wellington, bringing together a range of international and domestic speakers to talk about how better drug laws can be developed for the 21st century. An increasing number of countries around the world are shifting their stance towards controlling drugs, away from prohibitive approach and towards law and policy that promotes health and well-being. One of the speakers at the symposium is Professor of Criminology at Durham University, Fiona Mesham, who is also the director of a non-profit in the UK that provides drug safety testing, as well as welfare and harm reduction services at nightclubs and festivals. 95BFM reporter Pearl Little catched up with Fiona to find a little more about her work.
I've been conducting research for 25 years or so, looking at changing trends in drug use, and I decided that there was really a vacuum in terms of harm reduction support for young people at festivals and nightclubs. We did used to have that about 20 years ago in the UK, but funding has been cut and there's been a refocus on recovery-oriented drug services. So we felt that there was a vacuum and we wanted to fill that, myself and my colleague. The person that I set it up with is a DJ and a promoter, so he's been involved in the scene for many years from that side of it, and I've been involved in the scene as an academic for many years. So we came together, set up The Loop in 2013, and it's been non-stop since then, really.
Yeah, so I mean, has this sort of work with drug harm reduction, you've sort of been interested in this for a number, you know, a couple of decades, as I understand, right?
Yes, that long, yes.
Yeah. So I mean, what sort of changes, trends, anything that you've kind of noticed over that time?
Good question. I suppose one of the biggest trends has been the increased variety of drugs. So with the new psychoactive substances, we've gone from, you know, maybe 10 drugs that were being used as party drugs to potentially hundreds now. So that's complicated things, along with a real variation in purity. And it's probably a bit different in the UK to in New Zealand, but in the UK we have a problem with very high purity drugs, which probably sounds counterintuitive, but one of the things that's happened is people are overdosing and dying because of high purity drugs. So for example, in 2010, about 8 people died from ecstasy itself. And the last year that we have figures for, 57 people died in 2015. So we've got problems with the variations in purity. So people don't know what they're taking, but sometimes the dosage can vary so much they can overdose. So that's another concern. And probably there's the advent of the dark net, so crypto drug markets, and the fact that people don't necessarily buy drugs from a dealer in a club or on the street anymore. They might be getting them delivered to their door. So that's been another change. And I think from my point of view, because I'm a professor of criminology, so I've been looking at the policing and regulation, is that in the UK, the policing has changed. So we've seen a certain tolerance or growing liberalisation from local police, but not from national police. And I think one of the drivers for that is that we've had austerity, we've had economic cuts to the public sector, and we've had 20,000 less police in the UK since 2010. And the consequence of less police is that there's less policing. And that has led to a focus of priorities away from the enforcement of the Misuse of Drugs Act in the UK. In certain areas, it's a bit of a postcode lottery, but in certain areas, and to just give you one example, in Bristol, they have a pilot project running at the moment where all possession of all drugs has been decriminalised, and they're currently pushing people away from criminal justice and into health services. So that's like a really interesting local development, which we wouldn't have predicted maybe even 5 years ago.
Wow, that's amazing. I had absolutely no idea that was going on in Bristol. That's really interesting that you sort of mentioned the high potency MDMA that you sort of get in the UK, because earlier this year I interviewed Adam Winstock from Global Drug Survey about this topic. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is because when I interviewed him, he essentially said that pill testing has been hyped up to be this final solution, that, you know, people are actually dying from taking too much, not the wrong thing. And I mean, whilst he said, you know, he doesn't think it shouldn't happen, he said that probably the most effective way festivals can combat this issue is through education about dosage, etc. I mean, how do you respond to this?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting, slight strange thing to say, because for myself and people involved in drug testing, we absolutely don't see it as a panacea to all problems. But in fact, it does exactly what he's suggesting. It's one tool in the toolkit in terms of education and information, because how can we educate people and provide harm reduction advice unless they know what they're taking? And the only way to find out what people are taking is to ask them what they think they've been sold, and then to test it and see what it actually is, and to make that connection on a one-to-one level, and then provide them with individually tailored harm reduction advice. So that's what we do. We don't just test and give test results. We have fully trained drugs workers in the UK called substance misuse practitioners, and they're fully trained, experienced, and they give out the results as part of this brief intervention, this harm reduction package. But the idea is, and I agree with Adam, that the problem is can be high purity, not just contaminants in drugs, but they need to know what that high purity is, and therefore we have to test to find that out. So in a way, I think he's missing the point of drug testing, which is that we can give information on anything. It doesn't have to just be on contaminants. And one of the things we do in the loop is we test pills, we find out the MDMA content, and then we tweet about it, and people can see that on our Twitter account. We are the loop. .org, and they can see the test results, and we produce those for festivals and for the wider drug using community. So one of the things that happens now, and I get emails regularly about this, is people say, thanks, I had no idea that that was the strength of those pills.
With many countries pushing for progressive cannabis reform, there are calls for New Zealand to follow suit. The New Zealand Drug Foundation released policy outlining the need to decriminalise all drugs, legalise cannabis and regulate its market. They argue that current laws are outdated and make criminals out of drug users, when instead drug use should be treated as a health issue. 95BFM's Ruben McLaren spoke to Ross Bell, the executive director of the New Zealand Drug Foundation, to learn more.
Look, we've realised, like a lot of people, that our current approach to New Zealand's drug problem isn't working and we should do something new. And, you know, in terms of designing what that new thing is, you know, let's borrow from those countries that have had successful reform. And we think as a starting point, the best country is Portugal. You know, they decriminalised all drugs. They implemented a health referral system and they put a whole lot of new resources into prevention and treatment services. And they saw huge benefits, drug use came down, more people could access help. We think we should take that one further step, and for drugs like cannabis, we should introduce public health regulation, similar to what Canada is going to do next year, where you introduce legal sales, but tightly controlled, with the aims of reducing youth cannabis use, as well as trying to undermine the power of the black market. Bottom line for us is, let's be grown up enough to admit that our current approach isn't working and that there are different approaches that do work.
Right, so could you expand upon the problems with the current system?
Well, look, I think we've got to the point with our drug law, which is now 42 years old, where the onus shouldn't be on me to prove why it's a failure, because I think the failures are so obvious. I think the onus now has to go on to those politicians who support the status quo to prove to us why they think that approach is the best approach to keep to stick with. Because I tell you what, you know, you put your cards on the table. We have some of the highest rates of drug use in the world. We have waiting lists for treatment. We are criminalising a whole lot of people, and that criminalisation is targeted at Māori and at young people. On any measure, our current law is an absolute failure. It's worse than a failure. The law itself is causing harm.
Yeah, so on that, do you know how much is spent on the policing and incarceration of cannabis-related offences in New Zealand?
Not specifically cannabis, but we do know that of all of the money, it's about $350 million a year that the government spends on drugs, and that includes law enforcement and prisons and so on. Of that $350 million, 80% goes to police, it goes to courts, it goes to prisons and parole, goes to customs, and only 20% goes to treatment. And imagine what New Zealand would look like if we flipped that around and put the vast majority of our drug funding into prevention, into education, into treatment, into rehabilitation. I think New Zealand would be a much different place. And we know that it would be, because other countries who have done health-focused drug law reform have reaped the benefit.
So some people might argue that decriminalising all drugs will just lead to more drug abuse. What do you say to them?
I understand why people see that this is a counterintuitive thing, that, you know, let's remove the criminal system and put in a health system. And I get why people will be fearful that that's going to send a message to young people and that we're going to get increased drug use. That's a legitimate fear to have. What I can tell those people that have that fear is that in those parts of the world that have put in health-focused reform, like Portugal, drug use has come down, more people can get help. The whole way that society views its drug problem shifts in quite dramatic ways. So, yes, people's gut reaction is going to be uncomfortable. But, you know, in the real world where these kinds of reforms have happened, good things have come from that.
That was this week's Bits. To listen to the full interviews, visit 95bfm.com and check out the BCasts.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/BCasts.